Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you joined us today. Well, Christmas is pretty much upon us, and I had been holding a story that I wanted to share with all of you. I did share it on Facebook. I found it to be a beautiful story. I found it to be the kind of story that gives you hope for mankind and all the things that we've talked about so many times on this show, about all of us caring more about each other and embracing the differences of others and everything that goes with living compatibly in a world that is, you know, completely made up of different religions, different creeds, different everything, 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 even in families, that are small, five people. Maybe there's nobody else in their family but the five of them, three kids and a mom and a dad. They're different. Imagine what it's like when you have a family like mine where there's, you know, if I count everybody, in the hundreds. So it's hard to not have differences. It's hard to not have differences of opinion. It's hard to not feel like the way you look at something is the way it should be looked at by everybody. I think we all get that. So when I read this story, I was so touched by the way this man thought and what he decided to do that I wanted to make sure the week of Christmas this story was one that I shared. I'm going to bring in Shelley, and then we're going to talk about this story. Good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Renee.
How you doing, babe?
I'm doing real good, and you, my dear?
I'm not too bad for an old broad, you know. I shopped all day yesterday, and now my office looks like, I'm not sure what it looks like, but nothing is wrapped. So it's a big job.
A major job for you is the wrapping.
You know, usually I have grandchildren around, and now everybody's, you know, growing up and everybody's got jobs and school and everything, so this year I'm kind of on my own, so to speak, in the wrapping department. So of course, I purchased a lot of gift bags.
I was just going to say that whoever thought of that is brilliant.
I know. One of my best friends and doesn't even know it, right?
Yep.
So here's what is going on today that I really, really want to share. For those of you who get on my Facebook page, you're already aware of this story. But for me, this was like, oh my gosh, what a beautiful, beautiful thing this person has done. He is a designer, and it's not here in the United States, of course, because we wouldn't be that, that innovative, I guess. It seems like other countries are a bit ahead of us with a lot of stuff like this. But this is just absolutely beautiful. And I think that it speaks volumes about how we need to look at things. It's a story about an organization that's honoring the physical differences of people in a very special way. He actually brought in folks that were born with, deformities in most cases, deformities. And he took great lengths to build mannequins that were shaped like these people. And there's a big well, not a big, I don't know how many minutes it is. It's a few minutes if you watch the whole video. And I do have it on Renee's Heart to Heart, and I had it on my Facebook page. But it's all about embracing our differences, more so than any other thing I've ever seen. So the name of this company is Pro Infirmis. It's a Swiss organization for people with disabilities. And he says, who is perfect anyway, which you and I have said 100 times, who is perfect? And this was created to mark the International Day of Persons with Disabilities, which occurs each year on December 3rd. Although the entire, it's going to come on real loud for me. It's a 4-minute video, and this man created it. His name is Alan Gosponer, which I'm sure I'm saying wrong, Gosponer. And it goes through all the details of taking a model of what you would call a normal body, different from mine, by the way, different from yours, just, you know, like average height, average weight, everything. And then he cuts it, tears it apart, makes it smaller, makes it larger, whatever he needs to do, so that he replicates these people that were born with major bodily differences. And it's beautiful. And he sets all the models up, the mannequins, once he's finished. And the folks come in and they look at everything. And you see young women who are in wheelchairs, people without limbs. One young woman is shaped like an S. Her shoulders and her hips and the bottom part of her legs go almost just like an S. And she can walk with the help of a cane, but it's labored, and I can't even imagine what kind of pain must be involved. But she takes a hold of the mannequin, and she feels the form of the mannequin and touches it. And at the end of the video, you see her standing in front of the window of this big organization with all of these mannequins dressed in fashion clothing from this designer, and she sees herself. And she just stands there and looks at it and cries. So I've never seen anything quite like this, and I've never and these people pose because they really get into it, and they feel, I would think, you don't hear from any of them. It's just it's like a documentary, so they don't speak to you. I mean, they speak, but they don't address the situation. They don't, you know, they don't tell you about what's going on or how they feel about it.
You're but just it shows their emotional reaction.
Yes, and it's. I mean, I've never watched anything like this. The one man. Some of these people are injured too. I mean, you know, they've lost limbs. The young woman that looks like an S is beautiful. Beautiful. And when he finishes these, he covers them with a sheet, and they all come in, and they get to pull the sheet off the mannequin and see themselves. And it's amazing. I mean, heartbreaking and amazing. One of the men is his right side has no hand and has no lower leg and foot. And he looks at himself. And then three of them are, you know, in wheelchairs. They can't walk or anything. And it's amazing. It's just amazing. And the one young man takes his mannequin and takes his man-made limb and puts it on the mannequin so he can see what he looks like to others. And the really, really beautiful young woman that's so misshapen, She has this great big smile on her face, and she hugs her mannequin.
Aww.
Just hangs onto it and hugs it. I mean, it's emotional because it's fulfilling and yet sad, and yet I don't know. There's just something about it that is. It's hard. I don't really have a word.
What's the name of the video and the organization?
It's Pro Infirmis, P-R-O, excuse me, capital I-N-F-I-R-M-I-S, and it's a Swiss organization. It's in. It was founded in 1920 in Zurich, and it's all about supporting people with disabilities. He also
the name of the what's the name of the video? Is that the name of the video?
It says, well, I don't. This may be the name of it. I can't really tell what the name of it is. This woman saw a mannequin of herself at a store. How she reacted to it brought me to tears. And I don't know. It just says Pro Infirmis. And it shows all the mannequins.
Is it a YouTube video or some other type of video?
Yes, it's a YouTube video. It's a YouTube video.
The YouTube videos, if you look in the address line, the title's there.
www.wimp.com/storemannequin/.
Wimp. Okay, say that again. Wimp what?
.com.
Uh-huh.
Slash. Store mannequin, and mannequin is M-A-N-N-E-Q-U-I-N, in case you don't know how to spell it, and then another backslash.
Okay. Yeah, I want to check that out later.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a heartbreaker, and yet it's fulfilling because it just puts a whole new perspective on what these people are looking at and what they're seeing about themselves. I thought it was amazing. I posted it a couple of weeks ago when I first read it, and I wanted to save it for Christmas week because it's a sad part of life with a really, really nice ending. Actually,
the whole thing is, I think, with a lot of times when people see people with handicaps, people that are scarred, deformed, or have suffered some sort of loss of limb, either they were born that way or they were injured and lost a limb, especially military people, you know, they can have all of that, have terrible scars and loss of limb, you know, from shrapnel and bombs going off and things like that. And a lot of times it's hard for people to look at people that are scarred. I think because we imagine ourselves and it's uncomfortable and we don't want to go there. But it's when you do take the time to interact with somebody who's like that and you get yourselves past the visual impact of their appearance, they become like anybody else. All of a sudden, you're not seeing their physical difference. And I like using the word difference. You're not seeing their physical differences so much anymore. I told you I have a sister-in-law. Well, she's my sister's ex-sister-in-law. It's her ex-husband's sister, and she had she was born with a birth defect called Treacher-Collins syndrome, which is comes from the 21st chromosome. Anyway, it creates certain types of physical deformities. She was born without a jaw. She was born a lower jaw. She was born without ears. She had her neck vertebrae are frozen. She can't turn her neck from side to side. If she has to turn to look at you, she has to turn her whole upper body. She doesn't have the ability to swivel her head. These are all parts of the Treacher-Collins. Now, but the deformities are all shoulders up. The rest of her body is completely normal. She actually has a very beautiful feminine shape. She's a very tall, lanky body. She has like a almost like a model pretty body, but shoulders up. You can see when you look at her that her face does not look normal. It almost looks like she's been in an accident. And they had to take bones from other parts of her body, create a lower jaw for her. She does not have ears, but they gave her a little something on the outside of her head, so like if she wears glasses, it can rest on them and things like that. So you can tell when you look at her, there's something wrong. You don't know if she was the birth defect or whatever. But she has such a powerful personality that when I first met her, obviously I took in the physical appearance. But now when I talk to Susie, unless I'm doing something like I'm doing now where I'm drawing attention to it, it's just that's Susie. It's like when you talk to her, she's very charismatic, very intelligent woman, and she's a lot of fun to be around. She's been married twice. Now, I know women who are drop-dead gorgeous and never have fulfilling relationships with men, or they're overly self-conscious about this or about that. And here, this woman, because of her outgoing personality, never had any issues getting boyfriends and has actually been married two times. And her first marriage ended, her husband had a stroke, so he died. If that hadn't happened, they would still be married. He was madly in love with her. And her second husband is the same thing. I mean, because you can't be around her and not be taken in by her great personality. But if somebody were to see her from a distance and be put off, because her facial differences are quite obvious, if somebody were put off by that, they would miss out on really meeting somebody who's very worthwhile to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've talked about her before, and I think that's the case with a lot of people who are born a particular way and don't have to make, I don't know, when it happens to you in the middle of your life, it seems to be a lot
right.
difficult to overcome the issues. I think I've talked about this young man that worked with me many, many years ago, came to work in the restaurant. He was born without his right arm, was only to his elbow. And then past his elbow, you could actually, and he was really quick to show young kids and talk to them about how he was born and everything. At the very end of what was beneath his elbow, you could see fingers that never grew. And he'd show kids that. And he could even move them, these little tiny little spots, like at the end of that piece of his arm. And he could do anything. I mean, he once brought me a picture that was on the front page of his hometown newspaper of him scoring the winning points in a basketball game with one arm. And he was a dishwasher in the restaurant I worked in. One day he said to me, "You have to teach me how to wait on table." And I looked at him and I said, "You don't think this will be an issue?" And he says, "No, I can do anything." I said, "Let me see you carry four cups of coffee." And he did. And I said, "Okay." So when it was in the afternoon, I'd let him wait on table. I was like the MOD or whatever you want to call what I would do, and I would train waiters and waitresses all the time. And he became an amazing waiter and went from being the waiter to the chef and from the chef to being a general manager in that same restaurant. So his ability had no stops, no he could do anything anybody else could do, which for me was an eye-opener. And I was always proud that I got an opportunity to meet him because it made me look at people who are different in a whole different way. He was the first, not the first person. person that I'd known with any kind of birth defects like that, but he was the first that I got to know so well. So it was a real eye-opener for me, a major eye-opener. And since then, of course, the tenure at the Institute, we met some other folks that had issues. I've often talked about the blind couple.
They're amazing.
Everything. They had no stops. There were no, there was nothing that limited who they were. But I think what I liked about this video was the looks on the faces of these people who got to stand back and look at themselves in a way that other people look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine there was a series of emotions. I would imagine it would go from, you know, a little bit of despair and sadness. Then when he finishes the mannequins and has them all dressed in the beautiful designs and the handsome designs and all this kind of stuff and actually poses them, they get to see their what's the word I want? They get to see the possibilities.
Yep. By the way, I found the video. The title of the video, if somebody wants to search for it on the YouTube channel, is called "Because Who Is Perfect."
Right.
That's actually the title of the video. So you see, you can actually go into the YouTube channel and put in a title of a video, and it'll bring it up. One of the other things I was thinking about, you know, when you're saying all this, is that I find it inspirational to see people that have physical differences who, number one, embrace them and end up having what are considered normal lives, productive lives, exciting lives. In some cases, they were born that way. In some cases, it's due to an accident. I look at that beautiful young girl who lost her arm to a shark attack, and she's still out there. She's still competing. She's still doing highly, highly physical things. And how many people do you know and that I know that have two arms and two legs and aren't half as adventurous as this woman? You know, I told that story about that young wrestler who they told a story. It was very emotional, and Troy McClain loves telling the story. He has this young man go sometimes to lectures with him, and he talks about him, and then he brings him out on stage. And this young man was a wrestling advocate. He wanted to be a wrestler his whole life, but he was very small. First year, lost all 35 of his wrestling matches. Second year, he lost all 35. And third year, he lost all 35. The last year, because he would not stop. He would not quit. He kept learning how to perfect certain moves, even as because he was abnormally small. And the last year, he won 35 out of 35 because he just perfected two moves. And if he got those two moves in, his opponent wouldn't be able to move. He would pin them. When he brings him out on stage, he's a quadriplegic. He has no arms from the elbow down, and he has no legs from the knees down. He was born that way. And I don't understand how he does some of the things he does, but he can type at a typewriter. He can type on a laptop. You see him there. He goes up and down stairs. He does anything anybody can think of doing because, like you said, he was born that way, so he adapted to what his body was. He didn't know any other way. And as a baby, you know, he didn't know his body wasn't normal. He said, okay, this is my body, and he got around, and he crawled, and he stood, and he figured out how to do things. And he's one of the most incredible people because from the shoulders up, he's very normal looking. He's got a handsome face. He's got, you know, very muscular upper build because he uses his arms so much to get around.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you pan down, you see the rest of his body. His body's different than ours, and yet he chose to do something that a lot of people with full arms and full legs wouldn't have had the stick-to-itiveness. You know, how many people do you know would have lost 35 out of 35 matches in 1 year and even tried to do it again the next year, or lost 3 years in a row and still say, I'm going to master this, I'm not going to give up, and in his fourth year, and now he's a wrestling champion. He's almost unbeatable, but he's got a different body. He's got a body that looks like he shouldn't be able to be a wrestling champion, and yet he is. And it's quite an amazing story when you can be inspired by these people if you take the time to find out what drives them and be inspired by that.
Well, I think the more we open our minds and our hearts to different people, different lifestyles, different physical everything. I mean, you know, gosh, Shelley, just look around us. There isn't any of us that look the same. There isn't any of us that are the same. For me, I think it's exciting to see the differences in people. I think it's cool to know that you don't look like anybody else. I always thought it would be terrible to be a twin, because then everything that bothers you about your twin, you could almost get hang-ups about with yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like you hate the way you're growing up, you hate the way your sister laughs, or you make fun of the way your sister sneezes, or the face she makes when she's doing something, and you realize, oh my God, I make that face. And you actually spend time trying to make yourself different because you don't like the way she looks when she does that, and you know you look exactly the same way. I think our differences are wonderful, wonderful. And I think understanding that is good for all of us. Now, when these kind of physical differences stop you from being mobile and hurt and give you aches and pains, you know, then I have a lot of empathy for anybody who lives a whole life. I'm put in mind with one of the figures of one of the mannequins of the movie The Elephant Man.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
deformities were, you know,
grotesque.
Like, you know, he really couldn't lay down flat because his breathing would stop. I mean, there was a lot of things. And I suspect a couple of the people that are in this video probably have internal issues with organs and things like that because of the shape of their body. So I don't want to make light of their struggles, because I'm sure they're heavy struggles, plentiful. And but the fact that they live their life, like you just said about your ex-sister-in-law, she made the most of everything, and she was happy to live her life happily. And those are strengths that, you know, you can't lend to somebody or give to somebody or help somebody have. Those are the same kind of strength, just like the fact that you were born with big feet or a funny nose. You can't help that. Well, you also don't have any say a lot of times in how strong you are and how capable you are. But I do think that when you're born with specific challenges like those, you find out very quickly what you're capable of doing. So in that respect, I think they deserve our accolades for sure. And I think
mm-hmm.
it's a beautiful thing. So did you watch the whole video while we've been talking?
No, because I don't. No,
okay.
Because it might interfere with the phone, so I don't try not to put on videos while we're talking.
Okay, because I posted it last week, and I got a lot of feedback from people, and a lot of people looked at it and you know, touched base with me about how beautiful it is. That seems to be the chosen word. Is beautiful. Everybody says this is beautiful. And those were my words. That was exactly the way I felt about it, like it was just beautiful. So I think also bringing it to the front of a big storm window also gives people the opportunity to appreciate and, I don't know, just a lot of times if you don't have anybody like that in your family or somebody that you've gotten close to, you're in a place of not knowing how to deal with it, not knowing who to look at. We've talked about the discomfort before of seeing somebody who's different and not wanting to be, I don't know, open about it. Maybe even the word honest comes into play, but it's mostly because people are embarrassed for somebody, so they get to a funny place. So these young people that are in the video, they know themselves very well, and there doesn't seem to be any embarrassment or any bad feelings about who they are and what they are. It is what it is. So I think if you're in a position to meet somebody like that, I don't think you should be worried about where you look. I don't think you should be worried about what you say. I mean, discounting any kind of rudeness, I think you should be open and treat them just like you would anybody else. I think that's what they appreciate. I remember Donnie, the young man with one arm, saying that to me, and that's why he was so quick to talk to young people, because young people would stare at him and say, I remember one thing that we laughed about for a long time. Little boy came in, and he's sitting in the restaurant with his grandma and his mom, and Donnie comes up to wait on him, and he looks at him and he says, "That's a pretty funny looking arm." And Donnie laughed and showed him his fingers, told him that's how he was born, and the little boy was just mesmerized. He didn't say anything mean. He just said, "You know, I mean that." He was like, I don't know, like maybe four. You know, that's a funny looking arm, and that's the way he felt about it. So gave Donnie the opportunity to say, this is what happened, this is how I was born, but I can still do anything. Sometimes this happens, and that's the way he would explain it. And I remember Mike, my Mike, after he got hurt when he was hit by the car, and he was just a kid, he got hit by the car when he was only 13. So when he was home and he would come to me, come with me to work because he was breathing through a trach tube and the trach tube often would give him issues. And when I did send him back to school, some kids in the school untied the back of the trach tube. And,
oh, God.
And it came halfway out. So I had to, in my beautiful $25 Electra car, we drove to Miami holding hands and breathing together because the tube was dislodged. And so we had to be very, very calm and just breathe little tiny breaths to get through it. And kids would stare at him. And he said to me, it's okay because little kids ask me, Mom. And I said, yeah, I know, I've seen that. But grown-ups would stare at him. Really stare at him and not say anything. So he got to the point where he'd say, you know, take a picture, it'll last longer, or something like that. In his 14-year-old head, he was like angry with the adults that would look at him. The kids, however, would say, what happened to you? What's that in your throat? And in the beginning, he struggled with motor skills, and he would lose his balance when he was walking. And he would say to me, one time we were walking in a store and his leg, his right leg gave right out on him. And he pretended he was doing an Elvis Presley move and we cracked up. You know, he wiggled his leg around and pretended he was strumming a guitar. And that's how he made it through those years. Knowing that, you know, things like that were going to happen because we would talk about it. And there were times when he was sad because of something somebody would say, or he walked into a classroom one day and everybody had their pencils, held them up to their neck and were sticking, you know, like pointing them out of their neck like his trach tube looked. So So I know that one of the issues for these folks has got to be the stairs without any conversation. And I don't know for a fact that they would be happy with somebody saying, you know, anything to them about it, but it would. I would rather somebody said, you know, looked at me and I could say, you know, I'm fine or anything, rather than just stare at me. I mean, wouldn't you feel more comfortable if you had an opportunity to explain to somebody, yeah, this is how I was born, but it's okay, you know, I get around and everything, and just the opportunity to talk about it like it's not a big, giant elephant in the room?
Of course. Of course.
Me too. Me too. So I think that doing things like this video is going to help that. It's going to bring that to, to most people and let them understand that it's okay to say, you know, are you uncomfortable? Can I, you know, not, I don't want people to be, too much, but I do think it's okay to say to somebody, you know, what happened is that painful for you, or are you okay, and let them say yes or no or whatever the case might be. Keeping it a secret, like you don't notice, I think is the rudest thing to do.
Yeah, or avoiding eye contact. You know, I mean, the most polite thing, the kindest thing and the friendliest thing to do is just to look at somebody right in their eyes and smile.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, I mean, but to avoid eye contact and look away or look down or whatever is, it makes the person feel like a plethora. It makes them feel like, you know, like people can't look at them, you know. And it's, when I do see people like that, you know, and sometimes it is uncomfortable, but it's uncomfortable because I think in our heads we go there and we're like, we instantly see ourselves like that, and that discomfort of imagining yourself in that position is so uncomfortable that we have like a knee-jerk reaction to it, and we look away, and we're like, well, if we ignore it, then those type of physical differences don't exist, you know. You know, it's like like the ostrich sticking their head in the sand, so to speak. I think that that's sort of like a knee-jerk reaction that people have. But it's the compassion out of your own discomfort. It's certainly not a reaction out of compassion or just normal friendliness. You know, so I catch myself doing it at times, and when I do, I'll bring my head back up and I'll look them right in the eyes and I smile. You know, and it's like, you know, they deserve a smile just like anybody else. And it's but it's almost a subconscious reaction we have from our own personal discomfort.
Exactly, and that's exactly what it is, our own personal discomfort, because we at a loss as to how to react. We're at a loss as to what to say. And maybe that's the most important thing we can share with everybody. Share whatever you'd like to, like you would with anybody else, instead of putting any kind of emphasis on the fact that they're different. Does that mean if you're 5'2", you're not ever going to speak to anybody that's 6'2"? Kind of silly.
Right.
There is a lot to be recognized and appreciated in our differences again, and I can't say that enough times, because again, you know, like right now, the scars on my grandson are plentiful, and he was absolutely positively blessed because his face was untouched, and but the rest of his body is scarred horribly. So you know what he's done? He's pierced places on his face. It's almost, I'm sure there's some psychological meaning to that, and I try to get him to talk to me about it, and he just smiles at me. And but you see the correlation between all the scars on his body and his face was fine. So he put piercings on his face. And I said, honey, why did you do that? And he goes, I just wanted to. But I almost feel a hidden agenda there. Something about...
Well, I don't know. I know a lot of people with body piercings, facial piercings. I don't understand it. It doesn't appeal to me. But for people that it does appeal to, it's... I don't know. It's more than just being different. I have my niece and her husband. Now, my older nephew, nothing. My older niece, nothing. But my younger niece and her husband are majorly into body piercings and tattoos. I mean, majorly. And when you meet my younger niece, she's this sweet, demure little thing. She's very pretty, very petite. Taller than me, but extremely thin, and but she has a very soft personality, which is, for lack of a better way of describing her, you know, she's very gentle. She's a very gentle personality, and yet she and her husband are like majorly into body piercing. She's got her tongue pierced. She's got the eyebrow pierced. She's got her lip pierced, and it's like, and I don't understand it, but it really appeals to the two of them, you know, and it's. I don't quite understand. Oh, she also did her belly button, you know, and that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, now none of that appeals to me. It, as a matter of fact, it freaks me out a little bit, you know. But so I don't understand the allure of body piercings. But for people that get into it, they really get into it. And I'm not sure, you know, because that goes beyond tattoos. That goes beyond, you know, like wearing goth. Type of outfits and stuff like that, and painting your nails black. This is like permanent. You're putting stuff in your body, you know. And so, like I said, I don't understand the allure, but I don't know the makeup behind it. I just, again, I look past the body piercings, and I just see my niece. And the same way with other people. You really can't judge a book by its cover, whether the cover is alterations they've done, like body piercings, or whether the cover is scars or... You know, or imperfections from birth. If you just put your reaction to the side, you'd find that there's a lot more alike in people than there are differences.
Mm-hmm. I would say that's absolutely true. I mean, but again, it's the differences that I want people to embrace and appreciate, because it would be incredibly boring. And I mean, you know, look at the movie The Stepford Wives, or some of the movies that are supposed to be happening now, where we all are so robotic and look exactly the same and all that kind of stuff. Who would want that? I mean, really, mm-hmm. Who would want that? I think it's great. To me, right now I have the TV on and I'm looking at Jenna Bush and the young woman that's on the Today Show. They're totally different, but both beautiful, not for the same reasons, for different reasons. And they just put on a clip or a snippet of the Handicap Olympics. And I'm also reminded of the young man that's been on our show, G-Money, Garrett
yes,
Collins.
Yes.
The young man that we interviewed, and his grandpa and his dad. And he, I mean, the bodily changes in him just since I've known about him, which has been about 2 years, are like shocking. He's muscular. He's built. It's given him more of a, what's the right word, a presence, more of a presence in his whole persona, because he found something that he's really good at and he's developed it. He looks like a fighting machine, and he has a gym now and trains other kids with Down syndrome or other, you know, for lack of a better word, I'm going to use the word disability, but I don't think he's been disabled at all. But that's how other people look at it. And he's built a business and is
but
proud of who...
Point. Other people would look at somebody with Down syndrome and make a blanket factual statement from their view of a Down syndrome person that this is not something they could ever excel at. And not only, or even attempt to be involved in, let alone excel at, and he has, in fact, excelled at it. Like you said, he's very muscular. You know, he's done something that people don't think people with Down syndromes can accomplish, and he's accomplished it.
Yeah. Well, and he's been stopped by the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right down to the wire for a big match. And they came in and closed down everything, wouldn't let him do anything. So, again, you know, a lot of that, I think, comes from small minds. But I think he has excelled beyond his and his dad's and his grandpa's wildest dreams. I mean, you hear them talk, and they, like, you can see the light come on all over their face when they just say his name and talk about how far he's come and what he has accomplished. So I guess the moral of this particular story is that nobody knows how far anybody else can go, what it takes them to jump high, what it takes them to run long, what it takes them to excel in anything. So being able to embrace everybody for the gifts that they give is, I think, is what we need to do. And I can't stress that enough. I think most people feel sorry for somebody when they see them like that. Instead of having a little bit of respect, it comes from a place of pity. And I have yet to meet anybody that really wants to have a pity party. Right now, there's a story of a young athlete who, the name of it is called I Am Unbroken. And she starts in the Special Olympics and excels. And her parents are talking about, you know, how far she's come, what she's done beyond what anybody ever thought she'd be able to do. Just the perfect story to have on while we're talking about this. But again, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. Ever, 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 I guess, is the moral to this story. Now, I want to read something because of the story that we did yesterday and the unrest that's going on in our world in regard to the killings of the two policemen. And a lot of public figures are being televised and recorded for posterity and saying really stupid things, which bothers me. Mayor Giuliani has said a couple things that I want to call him on the phone and say, excuse me, what are you thinking? Instead of trying to do something with the issues of today, they're pointing fingers and trying to blame somebody like it's somebody's fault that this has gotten to where it is, and I don't think that's true. I think human nature has brought us to where we are, and the more people want to just lay the blame on a particular person or group of people, the worse it's going to get, because that's what this is all about to begin with. But I want to read something that was posted. It's hashtag Blue Lives Matter, hashtag Police Lives Matter. And this was written by a gentleman by the name of Michael Lane. I am a cop. Call me whatever you want, police officer, deputy sheriff, Johnny Law, the fuzz. It makes no matter. The bottom line is that I am a cop. I have been a cop for almost 20 years and will be until I die. I will stop collecting a paycheck at retirement, but nothing will change. I am a cop. I bleed blue. I am not corrupt. I am not a racist. I do not relish in sending citizens to prison. And I do not leave my house hoping for a gunfight. No police officer that I have ever known or worked with is any of these things either. I live to protect the innocent from those with evil desires. I am prepared to die to save the lives of others, but nothing says that I must die to protect. If you break the law, I will try to bring you to justice. If you attack me, I'll fight back. If you try to kill me, I will defend myself to the death. I care not whether you are black, white, Latino, Asian, or any other culture or ethnicity. I am a cop and sworn to protect. The negative media and political leaders of this country only fuel hatred of law enforcement. Yet all of them sleep peacefully in their beds under the blanket that I and thousands of my brothers and sisters provide 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Without law enforcement, this country would sink into anarchy and crime. Amen. 80% of citizens have no contact with law enforcement because they do not break the law. 98% of police officers never fire their weapon on duty in their careers.
Wow.
How about the media? The politicians and the race baiters focus on crime and not those sworn to protect. Even if I do not know you, I will protect you. Even if I do not know you, I will try to bring you to justice. Even if I do not know you, I am willing to die to save you. I am a cop, now and forever. Is that not beautiful, Shel?
Yeah, he did a remarkable job with that, and everything he's saying is right on. I'm glad that he actually gave that statistic, because that was sort of my gut feeling, is that most cops never even fire their gun in their lifetime. So for people to just look at cops because a few sensationalistic stories get in the news is no different than any other kind of prejudice. You're judging the masses that are doing what they're supposed to be doing, that are decent and law-abiding and peace, you know, that they're really out there trying to keep the peace, based on a few that shouldn't have been cops in the beginning or that just made a mistake. You know, sometimes it's out of their own personal hatred, and sometimes they just made an error in judgment. But those stories get such media coverage, and it makes it feel like it's pervasive when it's not. So I'm glad that he said that 98% of cops never even really fire their weapon. I mean, because I know several cops that have been in really sticky situations and yet never had to shoot anybody, that they've drawn their weapon several times, but they never actually shot. They do carry stun guns. They said that, you know, that's like their first thing they go for. But, you know, so I know several cops that have never had to shoot anybody, you know, and they've already been cops. The young man down here, he's been a cop for 15 years. He's never shot anybody. So, you know, I'm glad that he gave that statistic, you know. What's the name of this again?
It's hashtag Blue Lives Matter, like it's all one word. Capital
right.
B, and then Lives Matter. And then
okay.
Hashtag Police, capital on police, lives, capital L, matter, capital on matter. But all like it's one word.
Okay, cool.
And I think, again, I think the person that shared this with me, there might be some relation there, I don't know, but I got that feeling. And, again, I would say that this is the... In my lifetime, because I always worked in restaurants when I was young, I knew all the city cops. I knew all of them. Some of them became a cop because their dad was a cop, and they were not good cops. I by that, I don't mean that they were corrupt or evil or anything, but they didn't love it the way this man does.
Mm-hmm.
And then others were cops because they thought they could make a difference. And those cops always amazed me. And those cops got involved with the people that they interacted with, whether they were good guys, bad guys, or just screwed up guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police force is made up of all different kinds of people, obviously. And obviously, some of them are good, some of them aren't so good, some of them are wonderful, and some of them are awful. I think everybody gets that. But if they became a policeman for the right reason, they're doing the right things. It's just like anybody else. I mean, I've also met people at the DMV. Those people get a bad rap all the time because a lot of times they are just cranky and miserable and look at you like, you know, okay, what do you want kind of a deal. And then other times you walk up and somebody's like, oh, you know what, if we do this, this can, you know, we can get this for you. Or did you know if you do, you know, and you're like blown away by the fact that they're enlightening you on something that nobody has ever enlightened you about. And they enjoy their job and they're doing a good job. It's the same with everything else. So for me, a policeman or a soldier who puts themselves out there for judgment, harm, ridicule, or whatever, has got to be a pretty decent person at the beginning of the day. Who they end up is usually due to our behavior, not to their own.
Yep.
But yep. This, I thought this was perfect, absolutely perfect.
Yeah, no, I think it was very well written. There was no anger in it. There was no, it was just, it was like, this is the way it really is, folks. You know, most of us care. Most of us are doing a good job. And, you know, I mean, it was just very well written because it was written with compassion and a little bit of common sense and truth. And this is when I have an issue with the media. Because the media sensationalizes things so much. I don't think the media does all these little quick sound bites, and I would love there to be a news station that would cover stories more completely, covering, you know, try to get both sides of the coin at the same time. You know, instead of releasing a story with sensationalistic details like cop shoots unarmed man who was trying to surrender, and then a week later said, well, he wasn't really trying to surrender, now we found out he was charging the car, you know, that kind of thing. I don't think they should put sensationalistic headlines out there. Just give the facts, and then as the story unfolds, tell it as it unfolds. But they run with these headlines that you can't take back. You've already riled people up. And what if they don't read the paper 3 or 4 days later when the truth actually comes out? They're hanging their hat. They're hanging their anger. They're hanging their vengeance on that first headline that hit. This is where I have issues with the media because they really do give an untrue look at what's really happening out there, not just in this country but all around the world. And most times you'd never see the retractions or you never see the corrections. People are hanging their hats on the first thing that's put out about a story.
Well, and I think that's really sad but very true. And again, you know, this line where he writes, "I will defend myself to the death. I care not whether you are black, white, Latino, Asian, or any other culture or ethnicity, what's with me in that word? I am a cop and sworn to protect." I think that of everything that he says in there, that, you know, is the truth, and that's the way this gentleman feels. We are out of time, just about. Oh, no, we're down to a minute. Yeah. There we go. So, but I want everybody to think about that. And to give some respect to that, because the truth is, without law enforcement, and we've said this on the show many, many times, if you don't get what I'm talking about, read Lord of the Flies, please. I get young people to read it all the time or watch the movie. It's important that you understand how much we need enforcement, law enforcement, and the safety of having law enforcement. So, have a great day today, everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow. We're going to talk about Christmas, We will not be on the air on Christmas Day, so Shelley and I can be with our families, and hopefully you will do the same. So God bless, and have a great day today. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Renee. Thanks, everyone.